WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begi on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510. Our dial on our radio is WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we can also be heard on the World Wide Web.
We can, and we are on SitaMediaInc.com. You can find us there, but you can also cite all of the shows right here on 1510WWBC.com. And of course, we post all of our shows and all our archive shows on our Facebook page as well, which is under Sita Media and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
That's right.
Sita, once again, what a fantastic job you've done. Another fantastic year of great guests, really valuable information, and just fantastic people that we've connected with over the year. And it's so nice to like hear back from those folks as I'm posting the shows and reposting the shows, because we went through that website kind of changeover.
Yes, yeah.
Now that we're reposting the shows, it's really just encouraging to hear all of these fantastic entrepreneurs and authors and activists and people that really, really have a concern for not just Brevard County, but our nation overall.
That's right.
So thank you so much.
Well, you know, you and I sit here on Mondays, and also Samantha Nazario when she's here as well co-hosting. And Paul, and you know, it's a lesson, right?
Yeah.
It's a lesson about life, because everybody has a story to tell.
That's right.
Everybody's
going to agree
with
things,
right.
And not everybody
right.
is going to be on the same page, but we all have that same story.
Right, and so that's why it's so nice that we're able to use our voice in a responsible manner and meet here at the station on Mondays and have our show. Because I think when you can speak from your heart, and you genuinely care about humanity, it's so easy to have a show.
Yes.
Like, you know, I went to the Florida Blue. It's called the Leadership Blue Gala. Some people say gala. I say gala. Mm-hmm. In Orlando this past Saturday,
right.
This past weekend. I took off Saturday, but I worked Sunday. So Diane and I went up there. And it was amazing to see the people that were there supporting the Florida Democratic Party. Now, people can support whichever political party they want, mm-hmm. and you pick the one that's closest to your beliefs. And so I'm a fiscally responsible Democrat, as you know, and socially liberal, not on all issues, but
right.
most. Mm-hmm. And what I saw there was people from all walks of life, mm-hmm. all races, all different class, mm-hmm. all religions. They had on stage the people who said the prayer before we ate was a rabbi, an imam, and a pastor from a church. And what I liked about it is everybody is there for a reason. Everyone was there at the Florida Democratic Party gala for a reason. You know, and when you get to a place like that, there are people who are in one little corner speaking about education. There are a group of teachers talking about teachers and what can we do to help our public schools and our parents.
Education, and, gun control,
right,
affordable
right.
housing, health care.
Right. And for me, when I attend something like that, I fit right in, because I can strike up a conversation with the wall at that point and say, hi, how are you? And I met a bunch of people that normally I would not have met. I sat with a really good group. I went with my friend Diane, who's a retired OBGYN, and I sat with two attorneys who are doing pro bono work, but they are helping people they're navigating a website where they're helping people who don't have an attorney so that they can get access to an attorney when they need someone,
right.
you know,
right.
arrested or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met a retired school teacher, and she was talking about her pensions, and you know, then we struck up a conversation about some of the parents who are now talking about the masks in the schools and showing up at these school board meetings and literally belittling the school board members who are elected officials and the teachers and the principals and superintendents and all that. And the bottom line is people are elected. Whether you like it or not, we should get to a point where we agree to disagree peacefully and respectfully, because you're setting a bad example for the kids. And so we were talking about no teacher, no principal, no volunteer in a school wakes up and say, today I'm going to go to school and I'm going to put a mask on a kid so tight that this kid can't breathe. And I'm going to say, Rob, no, it maybe ask, communicate with people. Maybe the child is disabled and couldn't put the mask on and they needed the additional help of that ribbon in the back. So, you know, we talked about certain things, and I like the idea that people are like-minded, care about the environment, like you say. They want policies that enact clean water and shelter and people to have an affordable wage.
Just an easy, one of the great illustrations that I got this past week was that simply that I had an email from someone and someone else read it over my shoulder and they just immediately went into attack mode. And I said, wait a second. I said, you're reading that with your tone. Read that same thing with like a Dr. Seuss tone and realize that there's different perspectives. And in those, and Leadership Blues, for example, that's another example of pocket groups of people. You might not have an opinion about gun control. You might not have children in school that it wouldn't affect you, but nonetheless, it affects a lot of people. And just listening to what people have to say, nobody opens up a day, wakes up in the morning and says, let me see how many people I can upset today. Or let me see how many people that I can disagree with today.
Well, life is as beautiful as we make it. Exactly. And talking about Dr. Seuss, you know, I have a love for authors.
I know.
And I try to use my change very well on this show and bring on as many authors as I can. Yes. And I was scrolling on Facebook and I ran into this wonderful lady, Alice Cran Good, and I decided to invite her to come on our show. And I was really amazed at what she's doing, because we all talk about getting children to read. We talk about, you know, all the things that we should be doing. And Alice is doing just that. So I know she's on the phone, and I'm going to have her tell us a little bit about herself and why she started her series.
And who's
called
Betsy
the Bookworm. I know. I was at the gym, and I was talking to somebody about Betsy this morning, and I said, Betsy the Bookworm knows mysteries are great for children. And whodunits turn children into little detectives, encouraging them to use their imaginations and ask questions. And so I'll let Betsy take it from there. So, Betsy, thank you for calling
that's
in.
That's Alice.
Alice. Yeah, Betsy is the bookworm. My goodness. We're going to have to correct ourselves on this fun, unscripted, educational show today. Okay, so Alice, thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you so much. Betsy is busy right now, so she said I could speak for her, though.
Yeah. Well, you probably are her inner voice.
Yes.
So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself, Alice Cran Good, and why did you start writing? Hello?
She might not be on. But have you, I've looked
We've
through.
We've got to get Paul back in here.
We will.
So we'll get him back.
So we do know that Betsy the Bookworm, that and all of Alice Cran Good books are available on Amazon, because I've looked them up. And you can get them, if you've got Prime, you can get them pretty much overnight.
She'll call back, I'm sure.
And it looks like Danielle Swick is her illustrator. So it'll be exciting to find a little bit more about Danielle Swick as well, and how she got encouraged to do these children's books. You know, one of the things that is exciting about this and the mystery crime and the asking questions is simply the fact that, you know, it turns children into divergent thinkers.
You're back with us, my dear Alice.
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Ellen, don't move from wherever you are.
Yeah, I was just asking you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I've been a writer my whole adult life, a journalist predominantly, and, you know, a feature writer. I've, you know, wrote everything you can imagine, from local news to regional, state, and even international news. I had a really great career as a journalist for Gannett, and worked at USA Today and also the Pensacola News Journal. And I also wrote for magazines. I've just been a writer my whole life. And then I also did a lot of writing for a state college for 7 years, and then more magazine writing. So I've been a writer ever since I can remember. Pretty much when I left journalism and when I left professional communications field, I still wanted to do something, and I wanted to do something creative. I am the administrator for a nonprofit, Jazz Pensacola, and I do a lot of their grant writing and PR writing, but still I missed being creative. So I was talking to my sister, who's an artist in Arizona, and Pat, and she said, she suggested it. She said, why don't you write children's books? And I went,
Wow.
And yeah, well, I'm pretty playful, spirited, and so I gave it some thought, and then I started coming up with ideas, and then it just, you know, the floodgates opened, and all kinds of ideas came, and eventually Betsy the Bookworm was born.
Yeah, it flew through you, and you have all your characters. You have Aaron and Afton, the prankster brothers, and you've got a lot of them. So what kind of research did you do before you decided to write the books? Did you notice that maybe there weren't enough children authors, which I don't think we have enough at times, and
No. We
don't have enough people reading anymore in libraries? And this I know because I have friends who are librarians, and they shake their heads because they don't have the children's corner anymore. They don't have books,
right.
You know. So yeah. So what kind of research did you do before you decided to get Betsy into our lives?
Okay. Well, research has always been a part of my writing life anyway. So, and even, you know, just sitting around, I research all kinds of things. But when I finally got the idea of what I wanted to do, yes, I did a lot of research about the importance of children reading and reading to children. And gosh, anyone can do this research, actually. There are so many, many studies and research by child development experts, health organizations, and even the government, you know, that show the significant, you know, positive effects of children reading. And so the more and more I read, the more and more I realized that the books were endless as far as what I could do with Betsy. What kicked off the whole thing was the first book, Betsy the Bookworm's Book Revolution. And Betsy, I used her, my protagonist, to show how children were really on their devices so much more these days. They weren't going to bookstores. They weren't going to libraries. I mean, I'd be in restaurants and children would be on little devices of all kinds. And also just, you know, talking to friends and family about their children and grandchildren. And it just has become a major concern. Also, I've been an avid reader and I love bookstores. I've loved bookstores and libraries my whole life. And I, too, obviously saw a decline with now people being able to read on their devices and order everything on Amazon. It was just starting to get scary to me. So the first book kind of kicks it all off, where Betsy has a book revolution that goes global. And that book really took off, and it really touched a lot of parents and librarians and teachers. And so it's done quite well. And so, of course, I did all kinds of research on the benefits of reading for that book and how you don't need Wi-Fi.
Yeah, right.
You open a book. And it just really took off. And then the second idea, Betsy the Bookworm and Books to the Rescue, I did more and more research about how books help children, and in so many ways. And so, I mean, if you look at what children are reading, there are many, 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 many books that touch on different issues as far as maybe, you know, different things that children are afraid of and help them, whether it's, you know, afraid of the dark or afraid of this or that. But I wanted to go a little bit further, and so research shows how books help children when they're afraid of something, because the most important thing, one of the most important things a child could do or a parent can get a child to do is to read about that something that they're afraid of and to learn about that something that they are afraid of, so that they at least understand and perhaps they won't be afraid of that something anymore.
Right. Not just read about it, but act upon it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. And so the second book, the little bookworm in that book, Sophie, who's afraid of something, she does exactly that. She learns more about the something that she's afraid of, and then she acts upon it. And the books, though, I just want to make clear, too, all have really good, strong messages like this, but they don't hammer the children over the head with these messages. The books are fun. There's a lot of action. There's lots of humor. Everything I do in my life, humor is involved in it. And so I just want to make sure that everyone knows that. You could teach all these lessons in a really fun way. And that's why one of the teachers at the Montessori school here loved the books, because of that reason. The books keep the children interested and laughing. And
it is suspenseful as well.
Well, and the other side of it is, too.
So the third book actually just came out about a month or so ago, Betsy the Bookworm and the Case of the Missing Bookcase. And Afton and Aaron are my great-nephews who live in Colorado, and so I named them... I named two characters in that book after them because, I don't know, it just, for several reasons. And that book is a hoot. I just absolutely love it. But I did, once again, a lot of research on how mysteries help children. And, gosh, in many ways, it encourages them, obviously, to read and complete the book because they want to know, they want to solve the mystery. It makes them ask questions. It makes them ponder. It makes them use their imaginations, and
it produces that divergent thinking that they don't just accept. Yeah.
Go ahead.
They don't just accept what's being told to them, but they're actually free thinking and thinking that there could be other ways to solve the problem, which is great for math skills. It's great for science skills.
Yeah.
It's great for
all of
those.
They're good for life.
Things.
It's life skills.
It truly is.
Right.
So, it sounds like I said, you're creative and you're the thinking that you're going behind. Is it stressful at all, or is it energizing? Because I know when I try and come up with ideas for things, sometimes it gets to the point that it's stressful. But it sounds like it's real energizing for you. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's been extremely energizing. I have many, many creative friends and writers and editors and photographers and all kinds of idea people. And one of them asked me, they said, why did you decide to write children's books? Like, what? I would expect you to write a novel. And I was like, no, I'll never write a novel. And I said, I love writing these books because they're fun.
Right, exactly.
And I said, I'm having a blast, and I'm having just so much fun. And also, I feel like I'm doing something with a purpose. I didn't want it to be self-indulgent. I didn't want to just write a novel, and I'm not saying just a novel. It's extremely difficult to write novels. Anyways, but I wanted to do something with a purpose behind it. And all my Betsy the Bookworm books will always promote reading. They'll always promote bookstores and libraries. And they're never going to be political. They're never going to be any of that.
Well, thank God, right? Because we want people to be able to read. I mean, there's other ways to get your point across.
Well, the other piece, too, is that, like, libraries and bookstores and so forth, I know as a child when my mom used to bring me to the to anyone, I loved the smell. It was like you get the whole experience.
Oh, I can't believe you said that. I love the smell of libraries and bookstores.
And, like, even now, when I get that smell, it's like it takes
it's
me back.
Back.
It's
memories.
Like a nostalgic
yes.
memory.
Yes. You know what I used to like about the libraries when my children were little, when they got their first library card, and
yes.
that look on their face when they get to the counter and they give the lady the library card and she swipes that card and it meant you can go get your books and bring them back.
Right.
Oh.
Right. It's so funny some of the things that the two of you are saying, because Betsy the Bookworm has her own Facebook page, and one time she posted about the importance of that first library card and the wonderful feeling and sense of ownership a child experiences with that card, and how proud they are, of having that card and being able to go and look at all these books and make their own selections. I have an author's page that I'm trying to get started, But actually, I'm getting so tired of social media. But I found an old photo of the library that my older sister, Pat, and I used to go to, and my other brothers and sisters, in our hometown of Johnson City, New York. It's an old Victorian house. And oh, yeah, son of a gun, it's still there, and it's still a library. And I found some photos of it, and I posted it. And oh, my goodness, I got so many responses.
We live in a time where there's so many people are promoting hate and division and fear and all that, and it's nice to have an author that comes along and say, I am going to take my stories and go in a different direction, where it has a message, but a fun, energetic message. So do you want Betsy the Bookworm Books to stand alone, or do you want to build a body of work to where the books are all connected to each other, so like a series, like so people have to read book one to get to book two, or can you read book two and then go to book one another time?
You can read them in any order that you want to read them, because, as I said, the first book actually kind of kicked off the whole idea. And when I was writing book one, I didn't really know what my story for. I didn't even know if I'd have a book two or a book three. But all these new ideas kept coming to me in my sleep, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So, but they're all written individually, so you could read them in any order that you want them to. But they all have, Betsy is the protagonist in all the books, of course. The titles will always be Betsy the Bookworm and something. And there's always going to be an important message that Betsy's trying to get through to the children. You know, why reading a mystery is a great idea. You know, why reading books, you know, helps you care about others and build friendship. Because, like, that second book where I see other things come out when you're writing, too. When I wrote that second book about books helping children, a big part of it, it turned out to be the importance of friendship and how friends help each other. And so...
Well, no social media could replace a good friend and a confidant,
right,
and a good listener, you know, because everybody need that one or two friends, special people in their lives. So as we're talking, I'm remembering the books that we bought when we were kids, or we borrowed, or we bargained with, or bartered. In my
Nancy
case,
I would
give a piece of, you know, my Indian roti to somebody who had a book, and I'd say, I'll give you a piece of my lunch if I could borrow your Nancy Drew or Hardy Boys. Or my brother liked to read westerns. He used to read Louis L'Amour.
Right, right.
I also had a friend who, we all in Trinidad, we read the Enid Blyton series. But I tell you what, we couldn't afford to buy the books, so we exchanged books with each other. We had our own little library for poor kids, you know? So
right.
So tell me, which was the book you bought and you say, aha, this was the best money ever spent?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part.
I said, like, which book did you buy with your own money and you said, this is the money that was well spent?
Ah, gosh, there's lots of them. I have some favorites that I can go back years and think about favorites, but like what I really love mysteries. But see, I love all types of books though, but one of my favorite books of all time was Memoirs of a Geisha, and
I remember that.
I read that book.
Yeah, it was a historical novel by Arthur Golden, and I think it was in the late 1990s that it came out, but I don't. The whole story, that just really resonated with me, and I was just fascinated by the whole culture, and I still am. I mean, that's a book that I kept and I will reread, but I love so many kinds of things. See, I loved Crooked Letter by Tom Franklin. I'll read that again. That is a real... that really connects the past and the present, and I highly recommend it if you've never read it. I think they made a movie out of it.
Just on a personal note, I wrote several business books. This is Ellen, and when I did it, I mirrored them after the Little Golden books. Remember those? And they had the little record in the back.
Yes.
And so the first one that I wrote was probably 50 or 60 pages that I remember, and I included a CD with it, and I actually did the Bing Turn the Page.
Well,
we've got
a couple of minutes left before we close off your segment, my dear. For our friends who are tuning in, we're speaking with author Alice Cran Good, and she's the author of the Betsy the Bookworm series. And Betsy, like me, likes to use her voice to send subliminal messages. Mm-hmm. Like I would use my voice to send good manners messages to my children or my friends' children, or I would try to teach them about respect using certain things. So we want Alice to give us her website so we can send our friends and family and anyone who's tuned into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to buy a book for Christmas or year-round. So give us your website, please.
Okay, hon. It's not a website. Betsy the Bookworm is on Facebook.
Okay.
And she has her own Facebook page. All you have to do is type in Betsy the Bookworm. And all you have to do is type in Betsy the Bookworm on Amazon, or you can go to any bookstore worldwide, and ask for Betsy the Bookworm. And if they don't have it immediately on the shelves, they'll order it for you and send it to your home. But all the books are available through Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, gosh, local bookstores, you know, big chain bookstores, little bookstores.
Well, as a New York girl, I hope you're setting your sights on a Macy's Day Parade float right behind Blue's Clues.
Yeah, and there's a bookworm there. And you know what? If you ever come to Florida, of course, now with the pandemic and everything else, everybody's kind of on the low, but make sure you come in studio with us and sit down and let's chat more about Betsy the Bookworm, because I think I could see in the future Betsy the Bookworm teaching our world how to agree to disagree.
Amen.
Well, thank you so much. I'm taking a break right now after three books of my fantastic, I have to say this, my fantastic illustrator, Danielle Swick. None of this would have happened without her, and that was the best money ever invested was in getting her. Getting a good illustrator, and we're already throwing around ideas that we might tackle next year.
Well, that is awesome, and thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of air time right now, and we need to skip over to our sponsors, but Alice Cran Good, thank you so much. We'll make sure we post all of your information on our Facebook pages as well as our website, and the download will be available of our recording today at there as well. Thank you so much, and happy everything. Merry everything.
Yes.
Thank you. Merry everything to you, too.
Yes. Merry Christmas, Alice. We're off air. Yeah, we're off air.
Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee with on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7. And we are blessed that our station also broadcasts online everywhere in the world that somebody can tune in online.
That's right, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that on-demand button. You can listen to us live, but you can certainly go to that on-demand button and listen to any one of the dates, any one of the shows. Of course, you want to look up Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and those will be all shows for the last, few years here now,
I know.
Least.
And thanks
then,
to
last
you,
10 years.
We've got our website up and running.
But
you know, one of the things I like about our show is you and I and our guests who call in, we give people a chance to showcase the good they're doing.
Yeah.
Whether they wrote a book, whether they run a nonprofit, whether they're teaching people about financial literacy in a bank or a mortgage, or whatever it is, if you're a politician running for office or just a regular person who just has some good points and want to help humanity, we welcome people on our show.
Absolutely.
And I have to tell you that when I wrote my book, 18 Brothers and Sisters, one of the things I did, which you know, of course, Ellen, is I gave 10% off my sales from my book to Serene Harbor right here in Brevard County, Florida.
Yes.
I remember having my, when I did my party.
Yeah, we had a nice fundraiser at your home.
That's right. And we had a party and we launched a book. And
I feel like part of that gate is yours.
Right.
Because
and I
that's
gave
what we were
a lot of money
for
right,
that time,
to Nancy,
right?
Who was at time at Serene Harbor. And then consequently, I gave money to them as well, because I do understand that not everybody is born with a golden spoon in their mouth. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is born to marry a rich man and have a lot of money and be able to provide for themselves and their children. And I learned along the way that money can't buy happiness. And I also learned that domestic violence affects everyone, rich, poor, all races,
it,
all
it affects
class,
some of those women
all
that
religions.
Married those rich men.
Right, it does.
You know, it changes their whole lives.
But as you know, having money allows you to support a lot of nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, the man's money is good. But when he turns awful and starts beating on someone or belittling someone or you being violent against someone, that's the part we don't like, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing is, I supported Serene Harbor and I support a lot of other causes in town. And so I invited them to come in on our show, call in on our show today. And so we have Michelle Garcia, who began with Serene Harbor in 2012 as an advocate and quickly moved up to become the shelter manager and the lead advocate. And in her role, her duties includes working with the clients coming into the shelter, managing schedules, crisis counseling, helping others, and of course, navigating people how to trust the good folks over at Serene Harbor. And so she is on the phone and she's going to join us and chat with us today about all the things that's going on at Serene Harbor. I know the relocation program, Heroes Helping Heroes, the anniversary that's coming up next year, and services. So, Michelle, welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you very much, Sita and Friends, for having us.
Yes, and for our listeners who are tuning in, Serene Harbor has served Brevard County for 29 years, providing emergency shelter, 24/7 confidential hotline, counseling services, transportation, relocation assistance, support groups, legal advocacy, outreach programs, referrals, and assistance programs to survivors of domestic violence. So, Michelle, talk to us a little bit about some of the good stuff that's going on year-round, not just around Christmas time, at Serene Harbor.
Thank you. Yes, I get so excited when talking about Serene Harbor, honestly, because we make it a point to do absolutely everything we possibly can to help someone not have to go to that abuse. So we have emergency services to help someone escape that domestic violence, but then all of our support that we have for them is to provide a full continuum of care so that this way that whole family can get wrapped around with all the support from our certified staff to be able to have that self-sufficient life and not have to return, because on average, someone can attempt to return about 7 times and possibly leave for good on their 8th time just because of all the reasons why.
That's correct. And you know, you all also have a program at Serene Harbor. It's called the Heroes Helping Heroes. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So Heroes Helping Heroes is our male initiative. And the whole just behind it is actually having this really great group of men, very influential as far as to everyone, to see that, hey, domestic violence or violence is 100% preventable. And a lot of times people look at it as just a woman's issue. So we have these males, and it's a play on the words, is he helping her, to say that, hey, domestic violence is not okay. Violence is not okay, period. And we're here to say that it's not, you know, it's not what you might look at as saying this is the way a man is supposed to be. No, a man is supposed to be respectful and be there and helpful. And it's a prevention effort so that this way we can actually reach out to all the kiddos, all the adults are able to see as well, hey, they're saying that this isn't okay.
And that's it's so powerful, because people that grew up in that environment, that's all they see, right? That's what they're used to, mm-hmm. is that, you know, one, wherever the violence is coming from, whether it was he versus her or her versus him, because it happens both ways, but it's such an mm-hmm. important cycle to break, right?
Absolutely. And just like you had said moments ago, right before, you know, I started, was that it doesn't discriminate. Domestic violence does not discriminate on the abuser side, on the survivor side. So the more that we can sit there and show our community as a whole that, hey, if anyone can be victimized, it doesn't mean that it's okay, though. And we're here to stand up and say that this is not okay. There is support and help available. Let's pull together and keep on showing and spreading the word that domestic violence is not okay.
And so many dads need to understand, and moms too, but I remember my dad as a kid, I have 5 sisters, he used to take us out on kind of lunch dates, you know, to open car doors and, you know, open doors and order food and, you know, all those kinds of things to, like, mm-hmm. show that respect and show that that's how you're supposed to be treated. So when we got older, it was like boyfriends were in trouble.
Right. And, you know, one of the things we talk about with Serene Harbor the last time you guys were on the show is that battering and domestic violence occurs among people of all races, ages, mm-hmm. socioeconomic classes, religious affiliations, occupationals, and educational backgrounds. And me being a survivor of domestic violence, and my mother, of course, I mean, everybody knows my story about, you know, my 18 brothers and sisters and my life, and how I was able to leave that situation because I chose to walk away. But not everybody have a plan. So, and we all know that a battering incident, it's not an isolated event. It happens a lot. So during the pandemic, we've seen a lot of this. Have you all seen an increase in your phone calls and the people seeking help through the coronavirus?
Well, and I just want to interject one thing, because we've also talked about it. It doesn't always have to be the slap or the hit. Sometimes it's financial abuse. Sometimes it's just verbal abuse and mental abuse.
Emotional.
Absolutely. So it kind of covers all of those things.
So, Michelle,
the increases.
Yeah. Have you all seen an increase during the coronavirus?
Yes, we absolutely have. And I'd say the biggest increase, not only in the numbers as far as the amount of individuals that are calling the hotline, even if they're not sure of what they're going through, but they're saying that something's not right here. And, you know, when we spoke about that batterer, it's about power and control, right? So if that batterer has lost that power and control, or has it had it threatened, because during the virus, when you, the loss of jobs, things of that nature, they're going to take that loss of power and be even more intensified, more dangerous towards that person that they're abusing. So our calls have even been way much more lethal. The amount of abuse that has happened, the escalation, so even when it's not the physical, it's the tactics have completely escalated. And then when they have become physical, or those who already are, they're near deadly as far as for just about everyone that we're assisting.
And it's so great that Serene Harbor has been such a support in this area for in Brevard County. You've got a 30-year anniversary coming up, correct?
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Yeah, so what are you doing to kind of, again, promote and let people know that it's hard to believe that people don't know.
30 years?
Exactly.
Yeah, we want to know where it is, because we'll put our mask on if we have to and show up.
We'll do whatever we have
to
do.
Where is it going to be held at?
Thank you so much. We actually are still, we're fine-tuning all that now as far as getting all that together, but just wanted to let you know, yes, we are going to have our 30th anniversary in this upcoming year, and you're going to see a lot of stuff from us as far as we have our signature events, but you're going to see more awareness events.
That's
a lot of awareness happening. Social media is a huge thing for a lot of people, so you're going to see much more out there than what we've already grown to do.
Right.
So keep your eyes open.
Well, you know, we know that Sheriff Ivy is a big supporter of Serene Harbor, because I meet him at all the events, and I'm so proud of him, of what he does for women in Brevard, and men and people who are battered. But I read somewhere that police reports almost 40% to 60% of the calls they receive about violence against women or an intimate partner is usually on the night shift. Is that true here in Brevard as well?
When we get the calls, it can vary. A lot of times we get a lot of calls more during the day.
Yeah.
And I say that because typically that person is able to call when that abusive partner is not there, right? So oftentimes if that abusive partner goes to work or leaves the home, then that's when they can be able to reach out, as opposed to on when they're there with that person. So law enforcement-wise, yes, they're definitely getting those calls more during that hour, because that's that. When someone's calling law enforcement, it's like, we need that help, someone to intervene right now.
Yes. And you know, Ellen, I don't know if you know this, and Michelle, but 85% of the domestic violence victims are women. Now, are you all seeing here in Brevard, are you seeing more people who are violated against, whether it's verbally, mentally, physically, socially, whatever it is? Are you seeing more women or more men?
We definitely do see more women. However, our numbers have also increased when it comes to the male survivors as well. So, for instance, the previous year, I think our numbers had reported maybe 10 callers that were male, and that actually jumped in this following year of 111.
Wow. So
yes. And I say it contributes to us, you know, all of the awareness that we're doing and putting it out there more and more and saying, hey, it's not a gender issue. It's an issue, period. Domestic violence is not okay, and we are here to serve all survivors of domestic violence, because we have a plethora of programs. If it's not emergency shelter, it's going to be something else within another shelter, another area, or all of our services, our injunction for protection attorney. Absolutely everyone is here to serve everyone.
And I want to, the last few times that Serene Harbor has been a part of the show, one of the big impactful things that I remember over and over again is don't be afraid to call, because an action might not be taken right away. It might just be that you need to kind of discuss what the plan's going to be. And this is what that hotline is all about too. So don't think that I'm going to call and all of a sudden everything's going to break loose, right? And my entire life is going to get turned upside down. You still have the power. And just remember that as the victim, you still have the power to make this change happen at your pace and at your, unless you're being hurt, obviously somebody's going to intervene and make sure that you're not
hurt
anymore.
As long as you're the person who is violating, you don't have a gun too.
Exactly. So you're going to be safe.
Yes.
And protected.
Yeah. So Michelle, are you seeing a lot of elder abuse as well? Because I know approximately 1.6 to 2 million senior citizens have become victims of abuse and neglect. So talk to us a little bit about the elderly. Are you seeing calls coming in from those as well?
The calls that we see coming in, it does happen. We have, some that do come in as far as into our emergency shelter as well. And then we also have calls from the family or friends or the loved ones of the elderly who they don't know what to do because during this pandemic, the parents are now stuck together and they're seeing all that treatment that's happening to that, to that one survivor in that household. So it is definitely happening. And we definitely do a great job with making sure that everyone knows that, hey, anyone can call our hotline for this information, for that support, so we can help you support those who you love as well that are going through it. And just to go back to what was just being said as well, it's like we're doing it at the pace that they're ready. So that's the same thing we're going to coach someone else who's calling for their loved ones, is that they're already being controlled by that abusive partner. Us adding more control is not going to help them. Instead, that can close that person off. We need to be non-judgmental, be open, be welcoming, be supportive, and know that they're the expert of their home. We're the expert of domestic violence. We're going to connect with them and help them build on what they're doing to help keep them safe and educate them, advocate, and always empower them for what they're ready to do when they're ready.
Right. And we're seeing too, we've always said to our friends and family, when I talk to people about domestic violence or any type of violence against a human being, I always say it's about power and control. What is the message that we're sending to our teenagers and our young people now? Because we've seen where people were isolated during the pandemic, and a lot of children have been bullied online. A lot of families had to cut their jobs out because they have to stay at home and raise their kids. And we see where the perpetrator is sometimes in the house right there with the woman and the children. What are you telling people who are in that kind of a situation, that now it's too close to home, literally? They're in the house with the perpetrator. What messages are you sending to people like that in order for them to access services?
Sure. So during the pandemic, we actually opened up our services even more as far as our lines of communication. So prior to the pandemic, it was just by calling our hotline, our 24-hour hotline, where we have a certified and trained advocate that answers at all time. However, now we have that someone can actually use the same hotline number but contact us via text, and it's a secure text system that we use, so it will not stay on their phone. It would actually remove when they're ready to exit that conversation. We have secure web chat as well that follows the same process. So when anyone texts, chat, or even uses TTY for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing services, it all comes directly to our live certified staff to assist them. So, and then we'll start with the first thing as far as thanking them for calling or reaching out to us and finding out, are they currently safe? That's the biggest part. And building off of that. So whatever their situation is, we'll listen to what that is and what's going on so we can help them safety plan with what they have. And that might be safety planning prior to the abuse, during it, if they're not ready to leave, or unless we need to find out what that escape plan would look like. So we're definitely, it's a lot that we're getting from them, because we can't come into anyone and tell them you need to do this. It's, they know what's safe and what's not, and we're definitely helping them with that.
Yeah. And do you all have any type of classes or outreach or advocacy at the high schools and middle schools for young children? So that they know the signs and symptoms of abuse from someone who, maybe in love with them, or maybe somebody they're dating, because we're seeing that abuse can happen at any age nowadays. So,
yeah.
So tell me a little bit about any kind of programs you're doing.
Absolutely. We're really big on prevention. That's a huge part of our programming to begin with. And our prevention actually goes into as far as schools as well. So just within the past few weeks, we actually had gone to a middle school and an elementary school. So we've taught as far as healthy relationships, boundaries, red flags, all of that from second grade up until seventh grade. And we've just impacted about nearly 900 students just within the past few weeks. As far as with those positive messages. And outside of the schools as well, it's that male initiative that I spoke about, Heroes Helping Heroes. That whole thing is to actually get to that youth as well, right? Because we know when someone's being groomed. But even all of our services, we have a child case manager that their whole role in prevention specialist is to work with that youth. So we've had dating violence, you know, where parents have reached out to us when they find out that something's going on in this relationship that their child's in and they're not sure what that's, you know, what's going on or how to address it. So they reach out to us, and our child case manager prevention specialist works with that youth directly on that and helps them through that as far as with what healthy relationship is, building that self-esteem, knowing about having a positive relationship with yourself and knowing what's been changing when that other person that you're with has started to try to change you and you don't realize it at that time, especially when they're so young and going through the ages and stages already.
Yeah, and I also read where the LGBTQ community, there's a lot of violence against those people at all as well. And that is heartbreaking because at the end of the day, we're all human beings trying to exist on this planet, right? And I don't understand why people feel this need to be nasty and mean and hurtful and abuse these kids. And too. So do you see any of that in Brevard at all?
Yes. It actually... as I said, as we've opened up more as far as spreading awareness of saying it does not discriminate, domestic violence does not discriminate, all of those numbers have been raising as well. And even statistically wise, on average, the youth are starting to date at age 11 now. Age 11. So you have that. And then imagine if they're already dating at age 11. Those who are, you know, part of the LGBTQIA community are also being impacted because, one, that's already a cultural difference that they're going through. But then when they have someone trying to have that power and control over them, it's just completely more drastic and more dangerous.
Yeah, right? And I would think of it affects these kids mentally as well because they're already ostracized by some of their families and their friends and their neighbors and children, the people in their classes, and even by some people who are politicians too. I mean, they say things without understanding how it affects people. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Michelle Garcia, who is the program director for Serene Harbor. It is a shelter here in Brevard County, Florida. And you guys offer a lot of services. So I know you're always looking for volunteers. You're always looking for items that people can donate that are in good condition. And tell us a little bit more about how someone could become an advocate, a volunteer, donate, and give us your website.
Yes. So if you go on to sereneharbor.org, we actually have tabs at the top that can lead you to exactly what your interests are, whether it's getting emergency assistance, whether it's volunteering. Our wish list is on there of our items that are needed on a constant, ongoing basis. So everything is right there. Our youth initiative is on there as well. It's called the Serene Harbor Crew. And all of our services, as you said, emergency shelter, relocation assistance, injunction protection attorney, which is all at no cost to that survivor. Every single thing that we do. So we're here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our staff is available.
Yeah. And once again, you can call, text, TTY, TDD, that number, 321-726-8282. And that's whether you're questioning the health of one of your own relationships or have some questions that you'd just like answers to. They're here to help. So make sure that you get that number, not just to you, but to make sure you get it to all of the people that are in your lives that might, you know, you might
that
have some red flags.
Right. So, Michelle, and here's one of the services that you all have offered in the past. I'm not sure during the pandemic if it's still there, but I know I had contributed to the pets. You still have your pet shelter?
Yes, we do. We have our pet kennel on site. Absolutely.
And and so any events coming up, whether in person or online, that our listeners at here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends should get interested in and involved in?
Yes. Towards the beginning of the year, you'll be able to see on our website, we'll have our 5K coming up. And so that'll actually be listed on our website as well, and that'll be a huge event as well. It's Pause for a Cause. Pets are victimized as well, and they go through a lot before they come to us.
Yeah. So we have about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you really quick. I noticed that some of the services and programs offered are victim compensation program assistance. What is that about?
Sure. Our victims compensation program, we're certified to do the application process with the individuals to help get certain funding if eligible through the Attorney General's office. Our relocation advocate itself, our relocation program, can actually support with additional expenses when it comes to help transition them into their own safe place. So that's actually another part of that.
Yeah. And we all think about domestic violence and, you know, people think it's just women, but it is women and men. What are you all doing to be advocates and encourage and educate men about respect for women? I mean, I open social media sometime and I see politicians who are born men, of course, and they are so rude and hateful and saying rotten things about women right here in Brevard. So what are you all doing to teach the men that, hey, respect comes from within. It comes from the home. It comes from the foundation, that in order for us to show respect, we have to give respect, both men and women. How do you all deal with that issue when a man is just being disrespectful, whether it's on social media or in person? I have to say men and women, Ellen, right? Because they're both sometimes. I mean, we're in a climate right now where hate and division and fear seems to be running rampant. What is Serene Harbor doing to help with that?
Yes, so we are definitely having our voices be heard, whether it's through social media, through different infographics that we have, showing how something should be, whether it's if it's in person and that's happening, that's an opportunity that we have to educate someone on what's not okay as well as what is okay. So every single staff of ours is there to advocate, empower, and educate every single person that crosses our path. And that's where our male initiative comes into play as well. It's a whole group of men that are saying, this is the way that it should not be. This is the way that it should be. We're here to respect, help, and power, and
Yeah, I think we should be teaching our boys from childhood to respect the person they're with and teaching our girls to show respect as well. And I am so grateful that you have that initiative, because I think we've got to get back to a point in our country where we agree to disagree. And everything, love is the force that moves the universe, right? And we want people to be peaceful and kind and loving. And hopefully when they meet someone and they fall in love, they would take those characteristics into that relationship and respect each other and respect life.
Yes, absolutely. That's why our prevention program actually starts with the youth. We've got to get them while they're real small, so that this way we can start building those seeds, planting those seeds of what healthy is supposed to look like, because you don't know what you don't know.
I know. I life is all about relationships, right?
Absolutely.
It really
so
is.
One more time for that hotline number and website information, so that, Michelle, we know how to get in touch with you.
Yes, absolutely. Our hotline number is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 321-726-8282. Our website is www.serenehabber.org.
And there's also a contact page on there as well, so if you don't feel like you can make that phone call, you can certainly get through the website as well. And Michelle Garcia, thank you so much for joining us and educating us again on what Serene Harbor is doing for our community and for our, you know, honestly, for all of the citizens and so forth that are here. We're going to sign off now. Another wonderful edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Yeah, what a great show. Once again, a great show. Thank you all so much, and tune in next week here at 1 o'clock. You